Welcome back to Near FM 90.3 and the Lifeline programme, and I am absolutely delighted to introduce my guest. Good morning, Liam.
How are you doing? Are you well?
I'm not too bad, Liam. You're going to chat to us a little bit about the psychology of finance. Does money really make you happy? I'm not too sure. Not having too much, I'd say I'd like a little bit more. But can too much be, can it really hassle, can it give you more of a problem it'd be unexpected to have that problem, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so I think there's probably two sides to this coin. So yes, in a way, money does make you happy, but only up to a certain extent. So there was a study done by two Nobel laureates, a guy called Daniel Kahneman and Angus Deaton, and they found up to a certain point, as your income rose, so did your happiness. But when it got to about $75,000, yes, your income may increase, but your happiness didn't necessarily increase along with that or after that figure. So it does make you happy up to a certain point, but after a certain point, happiness doesn't increase significantly with the more money you make. And sometimes it even can cause you problems. So you'd see people that they say, oh, if I could make a little bit more, but then with that, sometimes other problems will arise because they'll want a bigger house, they'll want a bigger car, they'll want, you know, private school for the kids, and they end up borrowing more money because the fact that they're making more money, they have a bigger potential to repay it, and it can become a problem very quickly if it's not managed.
So, and even relationships with money, I mean, one of the things that I have to say, because I was down the country, and somebody told me that this man had passed away, and his son had worked on the farm, but he wasn't the eldest son, and the eldest son, who never worked on the farm, got the farm. So there can be, and it was a lot of land, so there can be problems with things like that, isn't there, within a family?
Traditionally, in the past, it would have been probably more of a problem. It's kind of, I suppose, as time has gone by, like, I come from a farming background myself, so I would have heard those stories, and I would have seen situations like that in the past. But I do feel that side of things has changed. And a lot of, we'll say, people now, a lot of farmers, a lot of business owners, they are employing financial planners to help them pass on the businesses to the next generation. And they're probably more aware that they're kind of creating wills, and these issues still happen from time to time. They don't happen at the same level that would have happened in previous generations. But it is really, really important that, I suppose, if that's something that people are considering, passing businesses or assets on to the next generation, not only did they get financial advice, but they also get good legal and tax advice, because that's important, because they can save a lot of money on how they pass these assets on when they're gone.
So first of all, to make sure, if you want a happy family and you have property and you have money, to make sure that you make a will is very important. But it's hugely important. And always get advice. I mean, even people where I'm living around now at the moment, they may not have too much, but it's even still, if they have the house and they're living in the house, it's vital that they plan for the future. So if people are making more money, Liam, do they shift their goals? I mean, do they, the goalposts or something, would they shift them and want the bigger house, the bigger this? Would they get to a stage where nothing materialistic is important? It has to be bigger, bigger, bigger.
And I suppose the desire to have more is a problem. Like, it is a problem. And yes, like, the more money people make, for some people they want more prestige, they want the bigger house, they want the bigger car. And as I said earlier, it can lead to bigger debt because they're borrowing to achieve these things. But when they hire a planner, or when they get involved with people like ourselves, we're trying to improve their relationship with money. It's a bit like, you know, if you're planning to lose weight at the start of the year, you have a meal plan, you have an exercise plan. So people begin to view money a bit like that. Their relationship with money will have a positive impact on their lifestyle, their health, particularly their mental health. But they get advice, and they're trying to figure out, okay, well, if I'm making this kind of money and I have these little expenses, how do I manage it? And that's why they would employ a planner to help them along with that.
And apart from people, like, we're just talking about regular families and regular people, and you think they should have, somehow they should plan, because even from a food point of view, I mean, I know, living on my own, that I buy food, but I could waste a fair bit of it because I haven't actually planned.
Yeah, and it is. Like, I mean, we're all the same, whether you're kind of living by yourself or living with a family. It is a large proportion of the shopping is thrown out every week. But even myself, recently, I was changing utility provider. And while people say, oh, it's an awful lot of work and it's a lot of hassle, but if you look at the savings that you can make during the course of the year by switching your gas or your electric or your telephone, they all add up. And I suppose with the cost of living getting so high, any savings that you can make along the way, it's really important to look at these things and to make a plan and to see where you can make savings.
Okay, I just realised that I'm not smart. And that's been the honest truth. So,
For many people, it's not being smart. So I suppose it's being organised.
It's being organised. Yeah. It's being organised.
I would have been like everyone else, and you'd have. You know, it's easy just to kind of put things off. But when you actually go to the trouble of doing it once, and you say, "Geez, like I saved a couple hundred quid there," and I'll try it again with another provider, then it becomes a habit, and it's a positive habit. It's a positive thing to do to see if you can change provider and save a few pounds along the way. And the more savings that you make, like we've done a study with clients there recently, and 48% of them said that they felt happier when they saved money. So these little things, by switching your utilities or switching your telephone provider, they're all savings, and you will get a level of satisfaction from saving money.
I'm going to adopt you, Liam. I'm going to adopt you because I started off and just thinking on one level, and now I've completely I have my inferiority complex happy sitting here beside me, and I'm going to if people are working now, I'm retired, so I volunteer here, but if people are working, should they ask for a pay rise because the cost of living is going up?
It is, and they should. No, even the studies would show that men are more likely to ask for a pay rise than females, which was actually kind of when we got the results back, I thought that was surprising. But yes, people should ask for a pay rise, and a pay rise can come. Yes, it can come in more money, obviously, but it can come in increased pension contributions. It can come there's more than one way to skin a cat. But yes, if they don't ask for a pay rise, they're never going to get. So they should ask.
Okay, well, I know that going to school, we never had, we're talking secondary school, we never had a debating society, nor did we ever have, and we're talking just all girls school here. So we were never encouraged to stand up and just say hi. It was more important to make scones, and I am a lot older than you, and baking was a little bit more important than anything else. So for young women now, and women, all women, to ask for that pay rise, and shops.
I suppose I've been working in financial services for almost 30 years, and I definitely have seen a generation of females coming through where they're very confident, they're well able to ask, and rightly so. They should.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They're hugely valuable to work for, so they should be rewarded for that, and they should be confident enough to ask for a pay raise.
Right. And even my age, that if they're still working, and I know
every
that...
Every age. Age should not be a factor in any of these things. It should be experience, it should be productivity, what are you bringing to the table? So yes, I don't see age as a problem when asking for anything.
And as I said, I'm shop smart and consciously to that, where the weekly grocery shop, where I would be going in, and I'm being really bad here now when I say this, Liam, because I'm on my own. I just go, I'll buy that and don't actually use. And I know this morning when I opened the fridge to take out the milk for a cup of tea, and there's things I haven't used, and I bought them a couple of days ago. And so I haven't planned. So that's really important as well, isn't it?
It is, as I said, because you just, it's a shame to throw it up. And number two, with the cost of living getting higher, people are looking for ways to try and make your money last a bit longer. So it's no harm to be a bit more conscious when you're doing a shop, or a bit more aware of what you're buying. Will it last? Won't it last? Is it something that I might need in 3 days' time? So I'll buy it in 3 days' time as opposed to buying it today and it being spoiled by the time that you need it. So it's just to be a bit more conscious in how you spend your money, and just think a little bit about it before you do your weekly shop, and then buy the things that you actually need. And it's not only the weekly shop. It can be even something as like changing your car. Like I know for years there people were pushing new cars, but again with the cost of cars getting more expensive, it might be time just to hold on to the old car, because it probably has a greater value now than it did 2 years ago. So it's to try and hold on to money and get the value from the things that you're buying.
Well, I'm okay with the car because the car is 34 years old.
So, and you know what? And that's not a bad thing. Like we'd like it. That car doesn't owe you anything. And
no.
If it's reliable and if it's perfectly good for what you need, why change it?
Well, I think that I'm going to keep that advice, and I'm writing little notes as we move along here. And now the banks.
And everyone worries about banks, and they're always in the news.
Mm,
and people are worried about a number of different things. Like, I suppose a lot of them now have the worries about the Ulster Bank and KBC closing and opening bank accounts and switching all that. And then people are worrying about rising interest rates, and people are worrying about, okay, well, I have money on deposit and that's not doing anything for me. What do I do? So money, yes, in banks and investments can cause an awful lot of stress and questions and worries for clients.
So what would you say, invest then?
You see, if people have money in deposit and if it's not earning them anything and if inflation is working at 6 or 7% per annum, they're guaranteed to lose money. So it's costing them to leave money. So people are often worried about investing, saying, well, I could lose money, but they're guaranteed to lose money by leaving it at the bank at the moment. So the trick is, I suppose, to find something that they're comfortable with, or to talk to a financial planner that they trust, and I suppose to take a longer view of things. Like if you look at investment markets over longer period of times, they do quite well. Over shorter period of times, it can be erratic, it can go up or down. But if you're looking to put away money for a longer period of time, for 5 to 10 years, generally speaking, they outperform deposits most of the time. So you have a far greater chance of making money on a long-term investment than you do than leaving it on a deposit account, where at present you're guaranteed to make a loss.
What about investing in the post office, in some of their long-term? Would that be the same?
And a number of years ago, it would have been a really good option, particularly during the financial crisis, when they were giving very good rates on deposit. But now those deposit rates are quite low. And as I said, inflation is working at 6-7% per annum. So it's exceeding the amount of return that they're getting on the money from deposit. Yes, of course, it should form part of your plan, but not all your plan.
My goodness, you've stopped me in my tracks. And
I suppose everybody's going to be different, so everyone's going to want to achieve different things. So there's going to be a different plan in place for different people at different stages in life. So I suppose the best thing I would say to clients is get advice and get help if they're worried about things, and talk to somebody that you can trust and that you feel that the advice is fair and independent, and then you can make your decisions based on that. But it's far better to, like when we did that study with clients recently, 45% of them felt that they were generally more confident having got advice, and they were generally less anxious. And almost all of them said that they have a clearer sense of direction with their money following the advice they got. So it's a good thing to sit down and get advice and get a direction on what they want to do with their money.
And it is a funny thing because, I mean, I do have family, siblings, and they're all wonderful and we talk. But sometimes, particularly my two brothers, goodness, when they try to tell me what to do, and I'm older than one of them, and sometimes there's a difference between listening and hearing, and I kind of go, So to go to somebody that I don't know, but that I could trust, is even more important, I think, for some people. Where would you advise people to start looking for advice, please, Liam?
Well, obviously, I would say we'd ask people, independent financial planners are a good start, a good place to look, because we some models are commission based, some models are fee based, some are through the banks. Getting advice anywhere is good, but I suppose the trick is to find out what you're paying for and what you're getting for when you seek advice. How much is it costing you? What are you going to get for it? And just being aware of what you're paying for. and then go from there. And as I said, having somebody obviously that's qualified and someone that has a bit of experience would be essential. There's a myriad of different options for clients that they can look at, but obviously I work off a fee-based model as our firm InvestWise do, so obviously we'd encourage clients to look at that model.
And I mean, examining those questions, and I'm becoming quite self-aware now in relation to finances, because I thought I was reasonably okay, because I have this thing where if my home is insured, the car is insured, and I'm somewhat insured, I'm okay. But I hadn't looked at other areas, and I think it's the first step is really to becoming aware of how much I'm actually wasting now. Oh goodness, Liam, I hadn't expected this.
But it's like, I suppose don't see it as a chore to do. Like, being more aware of your money can be an enjoyable process as well.
Like
we find talking to clients and dealing with clients every day, they kind of look through the plans that we develop for clients and they say, Jesus, you know, I didn't realise that, or I didn't realise this, and it makes them a bit more aware of how they're spending and managing their money or investing their money. And even we say, when they look at how they do their business and how the people that they deal with get paid, they're more aware now of kind of operating kind of fee structures that they understand. They look at what they're getting for the advice that they're paying. They're looking at what are they saving over the long term by managing their money. That's slightly a bit better. So it can be an enjoyable experience. It doesn't have to be. I suppose if you look at it with a negative view, it can become negative. But if you look at it with a positive view, it can become very positive very fast.
I think I hadn't expected, I mean, we're talking to our listeners who are all over the north side, but I hadn't realised that I myself need help. That's the overriding thing. And I think when I started this chatting with you, I just realised, oh my goodness, I've been complacent, and that's the word. So I've got to take this on board myself, and other people do. And because I'm older and retired, that shouldn't stop me from still investing.
No, it shouldn't, because as I said earlier, everyone have a different plan. So like, you have a certain list of things that you want to achieve with your money, and it doesn't matter if you're 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 or 80. The plan might change for different people at different stages in life, but they still, even sometimes you mentioned earlier, you may have money that you want to pass on to the next generation. So how do you do that in an efficient manner? That's still a plan. It's still part of a plan. It's still a piece of the pie that people want advice on. So regardless of what age you are or what stage in life you're in, advice is a good thing. And it's good to have a plan.
I think, Liam, when we started chatting, I thought this was going to kind of go one way. I didn't realise that there were so many areas in this topic, because things change. Things change quickly, don't they? I mean, life changes quickly. And one minute our fuel is fuel for putting petrol in the car is cheap, and the next thing it's gone, whoa. So things can happen very, very quickly, and we have to kind of be more aware.
Money does have a huge impact on people's lives. It's a major part of their lives. And I suppose the psychology of money and how people think about it and feel about it, it can be a positive experience, but it can be a very negative experience. If you don't have enough money, it can affect not only your physical health, but it has a huge impact on your mental health. And there's been studies done in the UK with Lambeth and Southwark Boroughs, where they've had doctors helping clients or patients with money management, because it's had a huge impact on their mental health. People's, like you'd imagine, that people would follow the psychology of their parents when it came to managing money, but in many cases it can either be very much along the same line that your parents manage your money, or it can be the exact opposite, which was kind of funny in the studies that we did. In many cases, people had the exact opposite relationship with their money than what their parents have had. So money and people's relationship with it can differ from family to family, from generation to generation, but it's hugely important in people's lives. So having some way of managing it, or some way of understanding it, or a healthy relationship with it is very important.
I was just thinking of something of my own parents, because my mum, my grandfather was comfortable, and quite comfortable, to be honest. And my mum married my father, who was extremely well educated, but he hadn't a penny. But my mum at the time never checked. When she married, she didn't realise her standard of living would come down, and it remained down for most of her life after that. Now, and how she coped, I don't know, but she did, and she was the one that really coped. So it is extraordinary. But where I don't know in school if they're taught now how to learn to do a budget or anything else like that. But this has opened, actually for myself, it's opened kind of a bit of a Pandora's box. And
you mentioned earlier getting advice from your siblings. Like, I have seven siblings, and they're all very different in how they manage money. There's teachers and doctors and all sorts of stuff, and IT people in the family, and everyone's relationship is different with money. And it's interesting to watch them at times and have conversations. They all have views and opinions, but it's when they actually dig into their own budgets, as you just mentioned, and they look more deeply at how they manage their money, that it can become very interesting, and it generally does improve their relationship with money as they look into these things.
Well, Liam, you're going to come back here very shortly. I can tell you that now, because I'm going from being very shell-shocked to realising I'm not that great at handling money. No, I owe nobody any bills. But at the same time...
Which is an achievement in itself.
Well, so yes.
I wouldn't say that you're not very good with money. It's making people more aware of their finances and seeking help where appropriate.
Well, I think the fact that when I was growing up, I became very aware of money. I really did, because there was such a lack of it in the household. And I never realised that on one level... how important it was for me. And I'm not talking about the spending, it's just knowing that I have something. That's all I have to say on that. So Liam, I hope you'll come back shortly and chat with us again when I'm not in shock, because I'm in shock. And you'll be happy to know that Miriam, my inferiority complex, is alive and kicking and beside me in the studio.
Well, I hope nobody's feeling inferior after conversations like this, or the listeners realise that it's not as big a struggle as it needs to be.
I understand, but like first thing Monday morning, sometimes you know you need a kick, and you kind of just say, oh my gosh, I've been completely I won't be opening my fridge for a while and taking a bow when the light comes on. Let's just put it that way, Liam. All right, listen, thank you so much. Thank you very much for coming on to Near FM and the Lifeline program, and I'm going to nab you back in a couple of weeks' time, if that's okay, to chat again.
Delighted.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Liam. Many thanks. Bye now.